Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 123. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And we don't currently have a third host with us, but there will be one shortly, which is very exciting. And yeah, we're recording these two episodes. So this one and the previous one, like 2 days apart. So it's going to be a little bit quicker this time around. We don't have as much news or feedback to talk about, but really excited for our discussion today, which is with Roseanne A. Brown, the Rick Riordan Presents author of the Sarah Boateng series. And we actually asked her to come on to talk about Percy Jackson and the Olympians, because if you've listened to the previous episode with her, then you know she is an OG Percy Jackson fan, like actual real life, you know, loves Percy Jackson from when she was younger. And so we obviously had to get her opinion on season one. So super, super happy to have her along.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm so excited to see what she has to say about it. And, you know, we talked to Danielle, and you guys will have already heard that episode by the time this one comes out. And it was interesting to get Danielle's perspective on her not being a reader. So now I'm really excited to see how Rosie thought of the whole thing.
Yeah, for sure. If you would like to contact us to talk about the previous episode, to talk about the show, any of the books we're reading, you know, whatever your little heart desires, you can reach out at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, Threads, and Facebook, and Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. You can also join Prophecy Radio Reading Room on Facebook, which is our private Facebook group to talk about books that have to do with mythology, and that is super exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, we don't really have any news today since we just recorded, but I thought it was important and relevant to talk about the upcoming Rick Riordan Presents books that are going to be out this year. And so far, we actually have a handful of them that are coming out. Of course, A Drop of Venom and the second Winston Chu book are already out. The next one that is coming out, as far as I could tell, is It Waits in the Forest by Sarah Das. This comes out on May 14th, and this is a YA horror.
I'm still so nervous.
I know. That and The Dark Becomes Her by Judy I. Lin, which is out on October 1st. I feel like I'm getting like similar vibes from them. They're two completely different stories, but I think they're both going to be a little bit darker than some of the stories that we're used to.
Yeah, I think so too.
You sound real excited, Kristen.
I will make it through. I don't mind a little bit of like scary and creepy. Like I got Karen into watching The Following. That was all.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, I don't mind a little bit of that. So I'm intrigued, maybe a little scared, but for those, maybe there's some listeners out there that are also a little scared to read a horror novel. The last time Karen made me read it, we've talked about this before, but the last time Karen made me read a horror book, I listened to the audiobook, which was a huge mistake.
That's on you.
Yes, but that's because it was the best way for me to take the book in at the time, or at least I thought. So I think I'm going to try and not procrastinate within an inch of my life and actually read these, because I think maybe reading it will be less terrifying.
Yes.
We'll find out.
We will find out. I also wanted to mention that Pahua and the Dragon's Secret by Laurie M. Lee, which I believe is the third and final book in that series comes out on September 10th. And then we have Sarah Boateng's Guide to Saving the World by Roseanne A. Brown coming out on November 5th, third and final book in that series. And then I also wanted to mention, so a while back we had talked about Tracy Baptiste joining the Rick Rodden Presents family, and she was going to be writing Moco Magic. Now it kind of looks like, from what I can tell, things have changed a little bit. So the title of her book is Moco Magic Carnival Chaos, and it comes out on August 6th, but it is not technically a Rick Rodden Presents book anymore. It is being put out by Freedom Fire, which is Kwame Mbalia's imprint. And of course, Kwame wrote the Tristan Strong series for Rick Rodden Presents. So, like, I feel like it's still in the same family.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It might not technically be an RRP book anymore, but I agree with you. It's still related. It's a cousin.
Yes, definitely. So there's a lot to look forward to from Rick Rodden Presents and elsewhere this year. There are a few books that I might drop the titles of in the Facebook group because I found some cool mythology-based books that aren't Rick Rodden Presents that I feel like fans of the RRP books will enjoy. So I'll definitely have to drop those titles at some point, but for now, this is a pretty good list. Keep an eye out. Next one is It Waits in the Forest on May 14th. So definitely looking forward to that one.
Especially as we catch up on the couple that we've missed too.
Yes, yeah, we got A Drop of Venom out of the way,
Yes.
and now we've got to get into
Winston
Winston
Chu.
Chu, which is so funny because we're both like so excited to read it and
Yeah.
just haven't had time or the mental capacity to do it, but we will get there, and that should be pretty exciting.
Agreed.
But first, it's time to talk to Roseanne A. Brown about all things Percy Jackson and the Olympians. All right, so we are here with Roseanne A. Brown, who has been on the podcast before, and last time you were on, we were talking about the first Sarah book, and
Yes.
we also found out you are a huge Percy Jackson fan, and that you were one of us, which is what we ended up titling that episode of the podcast, which was episode 53, if anybody wants to go back and listen to that. And we're so happy to have you back again. And this time we're talking about Percy Jackson. This is a mostly Percy Jackson focused episode because we want to know what you thought of season one.
Okay, well, I am so glad to be here, y'all. Like, when I tell you, like, for your viewers who don't know this, how much of a Percy Jackson fan I am. I've met Rick for the first time last fall being fall 2023, and I literally showed up in a custom Yankees cap that had Wise Girl on it for our event together. Like, and I'm just like, that had to be one of the coolest moments of my life. And I think Rick and our editor Steph were very impressed. But was it a very nerdy thing to do? Yes. And I did it because I need him to know how much I love these books. And I got my
That is
first edition
awesome.
copy signed of Lightning Thief.
Oh,
I just wanted to brag about that. I just wanted to
yeah,
brag about
you
it.
should
I would
brag
be
about
bragging.
that. That's
Yes.
awesome.
Yeah, all that to say, yes, I've been in here. I am not new to this. I am true to this. Yes.
Yes, I love that so much. So there was a lot of hype surrounding Percy Jackson even before it came out, because I think we all kind of knew that they were really taking their time with season one, that they were really putting a lot of effort into making it true to the book. And so there was a lot of anticipation, but I think a lot of hope too. So overall, what were your thoughts on season one? Do you think it lived up to the hype?
I honestly think it did because I'm someone where it's like, especially with epic fantasy shows, they are so difficult. Like, if we have seen anything from like the number of fantasy shows that came out, like trying to recapture that Game of Thrones kind of like hype back in the 2010s, it is really hard to actually make a good fantasy show. Like, a really good one is very difficult. Anyone can make an okay one, but it takes a level of detail, it takes a level of understanding. And with the show, I feel like it was there, even with the changes. Like, I know there's a lot of changes that surprised me and other longtime readers, but like everything felt like it was a service series. And I was like, okay, I see why that change was made. And I think it shows the level of care that went into this adaptation in a way that I was very impressed by.
Yeah, we talked about that a lot on the podcast where we were like, okay, that didn't happen in the book, but I can see why they did it to like save some time because, you know, you only have so much time in order to get everything on screen. And everything that they did felt like it was in spirit of the book. Like all of the changes were like, you know, I could see this happening in the book, and that's why it was okay with me.
agreed. Like, I remember the first episode, like, I think the with the change with the fight with Mrs. Dodds, right? And a lot of people were like, oh, the fight's so much less epic and all that, but I'm like, I love that because I was like, it made the Minotaur fight such a bigger deal, like seeing him go from like, oh, kind of flailing, and like his first quote-unquote kill being kind of an accident to like this very almost like really I felt like it just emphasized it better. And like, you can really kind of tell, especially with Rick himself having a hand in it, like how much his own storytelling that's improved over the years might have like gone into him emphasizing certain parts over other parts than what we saw in the book.
Yeah.
Right.
And so for you guys, what do you guys think was like your favorite change in the show?
Oh, we talked about this quite a bit. I think we agree that everything with Grover was just incredible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I was losing it when Grover was like, I love war, to Ares. That was so, so good. That was, and it made sense. Like, I felt like it wasn't just a complete departure. Like, haha, Grover loves violence now. But it's like, yeah, like that kind of natural sort of, I'm just like, oh, chef's kiss. It was so good. So good.
I think we also really appreciated the changes they made to the Lotus Hotel. Like, with the things just seem more like choices, and like with the emphasis on Percy and Annabeth kind of being able to stick it out longer and keep their sanity longer because they were together, and like all of that, just the ways, the slight ways they had to change things to make that really sing. I think it really helped to keep the story moving through that section.
Agree.
And I'm just going to pretend that was a nod to House of Hades, like, you know, in the future, because, oh man, I would do a lot of things to make sure we get Heroes of Olympus, but
right,
that's a literally, little bit far away at this point.
Literally, I have the summoning circle ready. I'm ready to make the deal with the devil to make, what do I have to do to see Hazel and Frank and my kids? Because Heroes of Olympus is actually my favorite. Like, I love the OG series because of, like, you know, the nostalgia and like what it means to me. But in terms of like probably the one I enjoy most, it's got to be Heroes of Olympus.
I mean, it expands the world so much. I definitely understand why. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So what about moments from the book that made it into the TV show? Were there any that you were really looking forward to, and any that you were like, oh my gosh, this is exactly how I pictured it in my head?
I think the capture the flag scene, I think that was one that's always been my favorite. Like that first moment where Percy rises up with like the trident over his head. Like, I was just like, I remember I was like, oh my gosh, it's coming. And it's just, that was just like, yes. Cause like, you know, for me, like as an author, those reveal moments, like those moments where like the very first time the book, the character gets to show the reader who they are, or that first hint of it, like really kind of seeing like this grand moment for Percy come to life on the screen. That gave me chills. That was one I loved.
I have to ask too, did you imagine the trident to be that big?
I don't think I did. I think I saw it a little smaller in my head.
Okay, so did we. I think a lot of people were surprised by how big it was.
You know what? Percy deserves the biggest trident we can find. Why not? Right? Like, if you're Poseidon, send the biggest trident you have for your son. It's the only thing you're gonna do for him.
And I almost like picture it like, you know, Poseidon sends this giant trident, so then Zeus sends this massive thunderbolt, like it's like, you know, like they're just constantly competing, and so the last time that somebody claimed a child, it was like big, so Poseidon was like, it has to be bigger, like I just
so eventually Poseidon just sends an entire tsunami, like, yeah, that's my kid.
Were there any other moments? I think you were about to say something before.
Other moments I really, really loved. I mean, This one's ended up a little different, but I loved how it ended up the water world, especially getting to see Annabeth yelling at Hephaestus. Mm-hmm. Seeing the changes to that one, I think that was a scene I was really looking forward to. And then the added depth we got there with really her getting to be like, I don't want to be like you guys. That one was really beautiful to see on the screen. And then, obviously Auntie M, Medusa. I knew the Garden Gnome Emporium. I knew that one was going to be a tricky scene because, you know, obviously there's like a lot going on. And I think it shows a lot too how Medusa, how we as a society perceive her as a myth has kind of changed since the book first came out. Mm-hmm. And sort of, I was really curious. I'm like, are they going to go full, like we're going to redeem her and stuff? Or are they going to keep her like kind of a straight up villain for the books? And they kind of went, I feel like they kind of stayed in the middle of the road. Like she wasn't straight out just trying to kill them like the Furies. But at the end of the day, like, you know, they have to keep her head. Like that's just such an iconic part of the books. And so I was really excited to see how they do that scene. Actually, I was a little nervous, but I was pleased with how it went. I love, love, love the actress's performance. Mm-hmm. Like just how soft voice she was in that scene. Like it was just so sinister to me that like she's just this quiet, like nice lady and so terrifying.
Yeah. I think we could talk about Medusa for days, and mm-hmm. I feel like we kind of have at this point because you're right, her performance was so incredible. I agree that they kind of went middle of the road with her portrayal, and so much of season one was about, you know, the definition of monstrosity and how subjective it can be. And they really kicked it off with Medusa. And I think that carried through when you were talking about Echidna and her kids and even Poseidon and how he's viewed and everything. And yeah, I was really happy with kind of how they handled all of that.
Exactly. Yeah. Cause that's something in my Serwas series, you guys know that's something that's really important to me as well. Like never having just that black and white, like this group's always good, this group's always bad, and that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And so I really like seeing them sort of complicate a little more for this adaptation and really showing that like this, even when you kind of complicate matters and you don't make it as sort of clear black and white as we're come to expect, the heart of Percy Jackson still shines through and the story can still be told even when the lines are a little more blurred.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously we kind of already hyped up Grover, but what about other characters that really stood out to you in the series?
I mean, I got to shout out Annabeth. I got to shout out Leah. Her performance was just incredible. Amazing. Like when I say I am obsessed, and Annabeth is my favorite character. Like I mentioned, I brought a wise girl, my own personal wise girl cap to my event with Rick. Annabeth is that girl. She has always been that girl and she will always be that girl. And I know, especially because Leah, like you guys definitely probably remember kind of the backlash she was going with when she was first cast and how a lot of people got very ugly about it. And just really seeing her like kind of hold her head up and still show up and do an amazing job and really embody everything about like, I think so much of the fandom, like, you know, people always kind of joke like, you know, Annabeth's a smart one, and she is, but sort of these other elements of Annabeth that sometimes we don't always see, like the fact that like she is so detached, at least in the beginning, from like her own humanity and the human world, or like that this intelligence is really hiding like almost this level of social awkwardness to it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Leah really captured that. She captured like Annabeth being so smart and just so intelligent, and also that sort of detachedness, and really seeing her across the season really work through this arc of her becoming more human and more compassionate by being around Percy and Grover was incredible. I think she just bodied it.
Yeah. There are so many subtle moments where you could see her thinking things through. And I feel like that's not super easy for actors to do all of the time. You have to do a lot of acting with just your eyes and like very minuscule movements with your face. And here's this kid, you know, who's like 12 years old, who just killed it. And yeah, we were looking forward to Leah's performance as well, but she really, really knocked it out of the park for me.
Yes, that scene where she pushed him in the water, I loved that. I love that so much.
Yeah, it was great. What about the gods? Did any of the gods stand out to you?
Who? I mean, Aries. I wasn't familiar with the actor before that. Is he like act? Is he a regularly an actor? Or is he like a wrestler regularly?
He
Or
was a wrestler. He still does some wrestling, but he's been in other projects as well. He was it Vikings, I think?
oh, I've
I
not
think
seen
so.
Vikings. Oh yeah, that's why I don't know him then. Because I'm, but I really liked his portrayal of Aries. I really liked like the amount of humor he brought to it and as a character. Because I feel like it's so easy to make Aries just like really cool buff leather like motorcycle dude, which he is, but like there was almost a warmth to it, and almost like there was this giddiness, like this almost childlike energy to him
Yes.
that I think like the actor really brought, which was really nice to see. And so I really liked that. And among the other guys, well, obviously Mr. D, Jason Mantzoukas, there was only a little of him, but he can do no wrong to me. He always does wonderfully in anything he is, and I think he did so well as Dionysus.
Yeah, completely agree with that. And I guess that's a good segue into the last question I wanted to ask you about season one, which is, was there anything that you wish would have been different, either saw more of, or for example, we've been talking a lot about how we wish the season was longer, how we wish the episodes were longer, because we just want more content.
I agree. I'm episodes longer, yes. And I think my one is less actually story-wise and more. I would have loved to see a little more dynamic. What is grammar? I would have liked to see some more dynamic fight scenes, definitely, just because I feel, and part of this might just be, first season, like the whole team is finding their way, and in the future seasons we're gonna see like a lot more. But I feel like the fight scenes towards the end, I kind of was pretty e it was pretty easy for me to kind of telegraph where they were going. And in a series like this, where the battles are such a big part and the movements and things, I really want to see like even the way it's shot differently or the way they're choreographed differently, some things that could really like just blow our mind. Because with shows like Game of Thrones, like we've seen like what you can do with a TV battle on screen, and I'd love to see that level brought here. Like the Aerys Percy fight, like I want it to be just a little more epic. Not that like the actors didn't do a great job, but I feel like I wanted more from that actual moment.
Yeah, and I think Walker can handle it because he's already so good at doing his own stunts and he's had like sword training and stuff like that. So maybe that is something we'll see in season two.
Yeah, and the documentary, the little scene where he and like the Aries actor are training for their fight is so cute.
Yeah, I loved it.
So cute. Oh yeah. Okay, so speaking of season two, what new characters are you most excited to see in season two? Because there's a few we didn't
Tyson!
see yet.
Tyson, obviously, like if you're gonna see a monster, it's like I think season two, especially because Sea of Monsters is kind of like it's most people would say that if they had to have a least favorite book in the original five, it would be that one, right? Like it's not bad book by any means, but it's just probably the one most people are like, okay, we can kind of skip over this one if we had to skip one, right? And so I feel like the success of Sea of Monsters as a whole season is really gonna live or die on like how good the Tyson actor is, like the chemistry he's gonna have with Walker, and like the energy that he's gonna bring to the story.
I definitely agree with you there. Like, I feel like Tyson is a key element to season two, really just having that same energy as season one. I know Karen and I are also very, very excited to see Athena and to see who they cast as Athena.
Yes, I think it's gonna be so good. And Cersei, I would love to see the way they do Cersei.
Yeah. Are there any specific moments from Sea of Monsters that you're like really excited for?
I mean, when Annabeth saves Percy, like in guinea pig form, like
Yeah.
I keep mentioning Cersei because that's like when I think back to the book, that's always the first thing that comes to mind. Just because I think that's gonna be a lot of fun, another great Annabeth moment, and just another really great callback to Greek mythology with this really powerful like sorceress and like that really kind of magic and like that very specific kind of just magic that the Percy Jackson universe is known for. And then this is gonna be more of an emotional moment. I would love to see how Walker plays the moment where he finds out Tyson's his brother. Like just because like yeah, like that's not like a huge like epic moment in terms of like the scene setup and stuff, but I think in terms of the emotional acting we're gonna get from this character and really just like that moment where Percy sort of realizes like this dude that he doesn't like all this much as his brother, and like he's really makes him rethink his legacy as son of Poseidon, and like really I think that's a moment where like depending on how they like shoot it and like what they direct on like what Walker brings, I'd love to see the the emotions in that moment. I think it could really, really hurt in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. And that being said, I feel like Leah's performance too, because she doesn't trust, you know, Cyclops, like she has bad memories of them and that sort of thing. And to kind of see her on the other side of that and Tyson being caught in the middle, I think could be a really interesting dynamic for the three of them.
Exactly. Especially because this season, like, we kind of get hint at the group's fatal flaws, like, you know, Percy's loyalty, Annabeth's hubris, and like they're hinted at, but you know, the book one's your more standard hero's journey. And so we don't really get to dig into their flaws. I feel like, especially bringing Tyson in and kind of bringing Percy and Annabeth having to kind of work through their prejudices against him, really could add that depth there where we really get to see, like, what are the bad sides of these characters and how then, because they're heroes in the end, like, these are good people. How do they move past them? How do they work past this to, like, really become these, like, amazing people we know they are?
Right. Mm.
I know one of the things I'm really excited to see, I'm sure it'll change a little. I'm sure they'll probably do with Clarice and Ares what they did with Grover this season. I want to see how they kind of work with that relationship, because throughout Sea of Monsters, we see just how brutal a parent Ares is. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to see how they put that on screen and what that means, like, to the story. Because I have a feeling that's something that may shift and change a little bit. And I want to see what they do with it.
Exactly. I agree. Especially because, like, as we know, like, Clarice, like, towards the end of the series, she ends up being, like, such a major important character. And she gets so much depth. And, like, in those first couple books, we don't get to see that. Excuse me. We don't get to see that as much. She plays more of, like, a little bit of that standard sort of mean girl role, and I would really like to see that really deepening. Get that actress, I think the actress who did Clarice, oh, that scream she does during like the Crash of Flag episode, I'm just like, girl, are your vocal cords okay? I would, yes. And I think, and same getting more Luke in the second season as well.
Yeah.
Like that scene where he captures Percy is going to be so good. And like, obviously, like, in season one, like, the actor playing Luke had to hold back, you know, like, he has to not give away, like, us as who read the book, it's obvious, like, obviously Luke's evil, but, like, you know, like, kids watching first time don't know that, so really getting to see him lean into his villain era in season two will be very fun.
I am also really excited to see, like, them out on the open sea in a ship. Like, it's going to be a little different than season one. And I feel like that may give them the opportunity to play around with the plot a little bit and just, you know, have some more fun with it than we did with season one, where it was like, we have to get all the stops in.
Agreed. And getting to see a little more focus on, like, Percy's water powers. Like, so far, we just kind of, we've seen him just, like, you know, he gets angry, water explodes, which is, like, not inaccurate, but really getting to see a little more finesse with that would be great.
And also seeing how he, like, advances as a demigod with time to practice swordsmanship and time to, you know, be at camp a little bit before he has to leave. Like, I am interested to see how they show his advancement.
Yeah, and his mom as well, because, like, that's one thing in terms, I'm sure, now I know everyone has said this, and I'll say it again because it's true, the added focus on his mom, I love that, and the way the show keeps emphasizing how, like, Percy is the way he is because of Sally, you know, and, like, like, that at the end of the day, like, Poseidon gave him the powers, but, like, Sally made him a hero, and, like, the scene, like, in the Minotaur scene, when she was, like, luring him away, with a monster away from him and Grover, I was just, I love getting to see her play a more active role. So I'd love to see more of that in season two.
When you said that Sally made him a hero, I got goosebumps. That was so good.
Thank you. It's almost like I'm a writer.
Yeah.
So do you think that the show might inspire a little more interest in mythology across the globe? Like, I feel with the RRP authors and all the different mythologies that Karen and I have been slowly making our way through, it's been so much fun to see the differences and the similarities between all of these mythologies. And, like, do you think we could see more of those get adapted, maybe by Disney, maybe by other, you know, networks that are looking to compete? What do you think?
Sure hope so, because I truly believe a rising tide lifts all boats, and, like, you know, these things are, like, you know, they work in cycles and they never really go away. Like, there's a reason, like, thousands and thousands of years after the end of ancient Greece, we're here talking about the Minotaur and centaurs and all them. Like, they never really went away, but like I really think the show is going to have a way to just reach in a way that like no other sort of media, especially in children's media, since we haven't had like sort of a major blockbuster children's franchise in the same way we had like Hunger Games and Twilight in the early 2010s. Mm-hmm. And so really seeing Percy Jackson, which makes my 2000s child heart sing, seeing it sort of fill that role, I think would be incredible. And I do think that like, yeah, that renewed interest, like kids love these stories and they have loved these stories for so long because of like how they see themselves in it. And so if it draws them to Greek mythology or if it even draws them to see other mythologies, I think we can definitely see that happening.
You keep saying early 2010s, and I don't know why, but that makes me feel so old. It makes me feel like it was so long ago. And I guess at this point it kind of was, but I'm like, ouch, I don't need that reminder.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to alarm either of you, but next year is the 20th anniversary of Lightning Thief. So just think about that. Just think about that for a little. I know. Oh, I know. It's upsetting to think about.
Yeah. But, hey, life continues on regardless of whether we want it to or not.
Sure is true.
But I do, you know, kind of jumping off of Kristen's question, like I agree with you. I think that what the success of Percy Jackson, I really do hope that translates to other properties being adapted. Obviously, we would love to see a whole bunch of the Rick Riordan Presents titles being adapted because it would just add so much to that genre. And I think that like Percy Jackson, it could be a family affair, you know, like you can have parents and children and grandparents and all sorts of people could be interested in it because those themes are so universal. And like you said, there's a reason why they've stuck around this much. So yeah, I really hope it happens. I think that so many of the Rick Riordan Presents books have been so incredible and have introduced us to so many incredible authors like yourself. And being able to see that on screen is just always so exciting.
Thank you. I mean, you and me both, because like, I love these books. Everybody in the imprint is just so, so, so talented. And like seeing people like come to them or like seeing that every time like Rick's fans are like, oh my God, I checked out your stuff because like we liked Percy Jackson. Like it's so great. It's the best feeling in the world. And like all I want is to just like stand in a square every day and shout at people like, have you read Tristan Strong? Have you read like The Fallen, Last Fallen Star? Like just because I want everyone in these worlds to read these books all the time.
Yeah. I mean, same. That's, you know, a huge reason why we do this podcast is because we really want people to read Percy Jackson, obviously, but Rick Riordan Presents, like I said, has introduced us to so many new authors. And now, you know, I go out and I'm reading books outside of Rick Riordan Presents because I realized, hey, I really like this author's style. I really like how their mind works, the stories that they're telling and everything. And yeah, I just, whenever I can, we try to recommend the Rick Riordan Presents books.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. And speaking of, so it turns out that you have a book coming out in November, November 5th.
So November 5th, that date might be outdated because I'm not too sure. As you know, sometimes publishing things get a little wonky. A date goes out, it's not actually accurate. So I don't want to confirm that because I'm not sure if that's still true.
That's totally fair. We have had a few dates change in the past. So that is something to be expected. The latest information we have is that it's November 5th, but we'll see what happens. This is, of course, book three, Sarah Boateng's Guide to Saving the World. And, you know, we really, really loved book one. And I'm not just saying this because you're on the podcast. We loved book one. We loved book two. And I feel like it's really difficult to, like, step up your game in a second book and capture what was so great about the first book and then like make it different and make it exciting. And you really, really did that with the second book. If anybody wants to go back and listen, that's episode number 101. I think that we went on and on about how much We loved it. And considering where we left off in book two, book three seems like it's going to be packed full of action and consequences.
Well, first of all, y'all, thank you so much. Like, it's just, especially because with sequels are really hard, like for the reasons you said, and just like trying to figure out that balance of doing enough of what you did last time, but not doing the same thing again. Mm-hmm. And like, there's a moment when you're writing every sequel, where you're just like, oh God, why am I here? Oh no. And so like knowing like it hit in the way I wanted to hit is like the best feeling in the world. So thank you for that. And yeah, big, like, so one of the things, it's part of why we chose the titles the way we did. Because originally, actually, Saving the World was going to be the number two title, but I actually asked us to switch it. Can we hold that off? Because I intentionally wanted that each book, the conflict is getting bigger, right? Mm-hmm. Like, in book one, it's just all about saving the school, like the vampire that's just in the school. And then in book two, it's about the city, like they're saving DC. And now in book three, they're saving the actual world from a world-sized threat. And I was telling them, like, each book, we are going to get bigger and bigger. And I really feel like encapsulating that, all that. This is my first trilogy. I have my other series, just a duology. So it's just two books. Mm-hmm. This is my first time, like really having two books worth of like storylines and little seeds and like some hints I got to plant all the way in the very first one, finally coming to light in the third one has been really cool.
That's gotta be so satisfying. I mean, I'm also a writer. So like, I know how satisfying it is to be like, oh yeah, this thing's important. You won't know that for another two books, but like, just trust me, it'll come back. So I guess that's a really good, you know, you saying that this is your first trilogy. So how is writing this one different from writing not only your other series, but also the first two books in this series?
Mm-hmm. So I think the thing with it being like a third book, but also being a series ender, was that in the first two, I was so like, I could really just sort of drop things in and I'm like, it's future Rosie's problem to deal with how we're going to sort this out. And now I am now future Rosie. I now must deal with this.
I've done that many times.
Exactly. And because there's a way to like kind of like, it's just different, like wrapping up a plot, a side plot, even a main plot, or wrapping up an element of a story, let me say, in a way that actually does not generate more questions is actually a very specific kind of skill. And some authors are better at it than others. And some, like me, have to learn on the fly. And so it was very much, I think the biggest shift then was like I couldn't just like, oh, it's a battle scene. And then like, oh, they fight, they win, woo. But like, it's like, they can't just like win, or like, it has to be a win in a way that like, I cannot create more answers than more questions, I should say. I should not create more questions than I do answers with not even just the scene itself, but the way I do this. Like, I can't introduce a new power here in book three that hasn't been like either hinted at or like within the realm of possibility, because there's no more book after this to like explain it away. Like, I cannot just suddenly like I've written myself in a corner and then Sir Wuss starts breathing fire. Like, that's not that's not an option anymore, you know? Like, it's really like a, and so it's a challenge because you're essentially very limited in what you can actually do in a way that, well, limited in the sense, if you want to make sense, if you don't care about it making sense, you can do whatever you want. But if you really do care about like your story making sense of everything tying together and feeling like one cohesive unit, I find it does then limit my options, which is a challenge, because first books in a series, anything is possible. Like, anything is game. You're making it up as you go along. And now it's like, I have to follow the rules I made. What?
That is, yes, a very annoying consequence of caring about your own story. Yeah. So I guess we know that Sarah isn't going to breathe fire in this one, but
she's not.
What can you tease us about what will happen in book three?
So I'll say this about book three. So one of the big things, and we intentionally set up book one this way, is that book one is like, you're an inversion of your usual magical kid story. Like, you know, instead of like, I love Percy, y'all know that, but instead of you're like, kid discovers he has powers and like goes off to magic world, it's the opposite. You know, Sir Wuss starts the story knowing about magic, knowing about it, and she's learning to adapt to our world. Mm-hmm. And then with book two, we start to see sort of the other, I don't know how much I can spoil, but with book two, you know, she starts to see the other side of this magic conflict and all that. But what I really love about book three is that it's both a series ender, but also I was like, okay, so I've already gotten to do my subversion. I've gotten to play around with the structure. So let's do more of a standard quest this time. So the book three is actually the quest book in the trilogy. And so while both the first two books were very location-based, and that book one was just her little like hometown Rocky Gorge and mostly the school, and then book two was I-Step, everything takes place in D.C., this time we're actually going down the East Coast. We start in Maryland. Yeah, we start in Maryland and we end, I don't want to give away exactly where we end, but I can say we end far south of Maryland.
I like that. I like the idea of ending with a true quest and like, yeah, that's really cool. I'm excited. Ooh, that's really exciting.
Thank you. And I guess another thing I can tell readers is, so one of the, like, probably the biggest thing I hear about book two is that, you know, Sir West's friends take kind of a backseat, kind of like, out of necessity, after what happened at the end of book one, like, it was gonna take them a little while before they like came back into the picture. Mm-hmm. But they are back in book three and like, yeah, really getting the gang all back together, and Declan's there too. Good old Declan. I've gotten so many messages about Declan. Like, I expected more people to like dislike him because he's kind of a jerk. Like, and I say that he's a 12-year-old kid, so like he's a jerk in the way 12-year-olds are. So it's like, as an adult, I have a lot of compassion for him, but like, he is a jerk. Readers really love Declan.
I'm so glad to hear that the gang's getting back together, because I agree. Like, when we read it, I knew the reason why they weren't as much in the forefront as they were in the first book. But at the same time, it was like, man, I kind of miss these guys. So that's really awesome to hear.
Seconded. Yes. Agreed.
Yeah, no, it's so fun, especially because what's nice about writing them this time around is, in the first book, you know, Sir wasn't a teacher role, like, you know, she's the one being like, this is how magic works, this is how you don't poke a stick, like a sword, in your eye and kill yourself, like, you know, she's very much in that mentor role. But this time around, her friends know how magic works, like they've had their fair share of magic fights, like no one needs to have anything explained to them anymore, and neither does the reader. Like, I assume if you're here in book three, like, you know what's going on, like, we're just off to the races.
Yeah.
And so really getting to write these scenes where it's not so much like in the first book, there's like two layers, like there's Sarah dealing with whatever threat's happening, and then she's also trying to save her friend's skin and make sure like they don't kill themselves mid-battle. But now she doesn't have to worry about that. So really getting to do these scenes and choreograph them as a writer, where it's like, okay, Yeonju and Gavin and like Mateo and Roxy, they are all like as knowledgeable as Sarah herself is. And now that they have that knowledge, there's different ways I can move them in the scene. There's Sarwa, because she's not worried about them in the way she was book one anymore, it frees her to do certain things. Yeah. Like, it just opens so many possibilities.
Well, I mean, if you weren't excited before, yeah, definitely excited now. So yeah, that isn't out until November, so we have a little ways to wait, but we will make it there, and we can always reread in the meantime. We are curious, do you have any other upcoming projects that you want to tease, whether they're, you know, not RRP or anything like that?
Nothing that's been announced is all I can say at the moment. Nothing that's been announced, but hopefully that some stuff I've been working on now that should come to light very, that sounds very vague and suspicious, but I promise, I promise as soon as I can say more, I will.
We're used to it. I'm pretty sure that like every author that we've had on here, they're like, there is stuff, but I can't talk about it. And we're like, okay, at least we know something's coming.
We know to keep our eyes out and keep an eye on your social media. We'll get the announcement for sure.
Exactly. When the time comes, you will know. You will know.
And is there anything that you're reading or watching right now that you want to recommend?
Ooh, well, I just read, this is definitely a way older than Percy Jackson Reading Time, so no, this is not for adults, y'all. I just read the first Crescent City book, and so I'm starting the second one here. And so, Sarah J. Maas, I mean, I'm a big fan of the ACOTAR series, A Court of Thorns and Roses, because, like, sometimes you just need a silly fae book. Sometimes you just need a fae book, and just to have, turn off your brain and have a good time, and I love ACOTAR for that. So I just finished Crescent City. Oh, I read the new Holly Black, The Prisoner's Throne.
Ooh, okay.
Yes. Are you guys fans of like the Cruel Prince or her world there?
I have not read it, but keep meaning to.
Yes, I read I haven't read that series from Holly, but I read Curse Breakers.
Ooh, I want to read that one. Is it really good?
I loved it, and the audiobook is actually read by Jesse Eisenberg. And I
Ooh.
really liked the audiobook. I read it a while back, but it was, I really, really liked that series.
Nice. Oh, I gotta check that out. I love, love, love Holly. I love Cruel Prince. I think it's one of the best YA in years. Oh, and I also recently read This Is How We Lose the Time War, the one that went viral
Oh.
a couple months ago. And I'm gonna sound really snobby saying this. I usually book talk or like viral book recs are hit or miss for me. I feel like every now and then I'll get one that I'm like, okay, I see it. I'd say maybe 80 to 90% of them, I'm like, I don't know, y'all. I don't know. But this one, This Is How We Lose the Time War, 100% worth the hype. I was so blown away.
I
I
still
could
got to read
not.
that one too. My
Yeah.
to be read list is just, it's too long at this point.
Here's my thing. I don't even keep a list anymore just because it's like I'm just gonna make myself feel bad and everyone involved feel bad. So I'm just like, when I finish one book, I'm just like, what is the vibe? What is the vibe? What am I drawn to? And then that way I don't feel any kind of like guilt over what I'm reading because it's not like I have another list of books that's like staring at me, like, why aren't you reading me?
That is a much healthier approach than my current one. Maybe I will adopt that.
See, I just keep buying books and then they stare at me from my bookshelf and I want to read them all at the same time, and that's not really a thing you can do.
See, the thing is, buying a book and reading a book is two different hobbies. So
Agreed.
that could not be more true. That is absolutely true.
Well, that's about it for our discussion. I feel like we blitzed through that, but we said so many things. And I just want to say again, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast and for being such a big fan of Percy Jackson and for chatting with us about that. And we are so looking forward to the end of the Sarwa series. As bittersweet as it will be, I'm super excited for that third book.
Definitely.
Thank you guys for having me, and thank you for all you guys do, like shouting out and loving all the RRP books. Like, it means so much, I know, to myself and to the other authors. And I hope the third book is as sad. Well, it's I don't want to say the book itself is sad, but I know ending any series you love is always sad. But I hope it's worth it, and I hope that the ride. I hope y'all have a good time.
Awesome.
I'm sure we will.
Yes.
Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at subjectifymedia.com. You can find some of our other podcasts there as well, including Rewatchable, where we discuss our favorite canceled and cult classic TV shows, Not About the Weather, a general interest show that sometimes features conversations with our favorite creators, and Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, which includes exclusive interviews and an in-depth analysis of Teen Wolf and Wolfpack. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, Threads, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and that is such a big help. You can leave questions, comments, ideas for episodes, or content you want to hear from us in any of these places. We pretty much hit all of our feedback in the last episode. So this week, I wanted to take a moment and thank everyone who has reviewed us and rated us on all of these platforms. We say it every week, but I really, really do appreciate you guys. I don't always remember to go check them, but three of the bigger ones that I knew we were that we I knew our episodes were posted on, Audible, Spotify, and Apple, we currently have a 5.0, a 4.9, and a 4.8 rating, respectively, for each of those. And that's just really awesome. And I know that I believe it's Spotify and Apple, we have like more than 30 or 35 reviews on each. So it just from the bottom of my heart, thank you guys. You know, we may have missed them when they went up because we're checking all the different social media and we sometimes don't remember everything. We're, you know, human. But I really do appreciate that, and I hope those good ratings help others to find us when they're looking for a Percy Jackson podcast, or if they're looking for something that, you know, is a good resource for middle grade books and for, you know, really diving deep on middle grade stories. I hope that people will find us.
Yeah.
We love you guys. Thank you again and again and again. All right. So next time, we haven't really decided exactly what the next episode is going to be. We have so many ideas and they're just all floating around. So once we have made decisions, we will definitely let you guys know. So keep an eye on our social media and we will definitely drop a hint or two about what our next conversation topic will be. But until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.